Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode. A very joyous episode, I think, I hope, of Talking to Bruce. You can probably tell by the tone of my voice. I listened to me introducing last week's podcast, which thank you both, Andy and George, publicly for doing. And I know it was thoroughly enjoyed by many, many people. Not at least me as well. So thank you both for that. But yeah, I'm feeling quite chipper.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I've got a great, well, I think it's great at least. I should have been a headline writer for one of the tabloids, and I'm going to introduce it a bit later.
Right.
With regards to one aspect of the game yesterday. But anyway, Newcastle United 2, Everton 3, discuss.
Well,
I just only watched the BBC head highlights. So over to you, Andy, because I was working and you watched the match, babe.
yeah, I did. I did. And I have to say, for me, by some margin, that was the best performance of the season so far from Everton Football Club. The players looked confident. The players looked happy. They clearly listened to Talking the Blues last week, including Mr. Moyes. I'm sure he did, because at our first corner of the game, instead of parking 74 players around the goalie, we had one player in the 6 yard box at the first corner. And then Branthwaite made his run with the help of a slight push in the back from Tonali, but we'll forgive him that because he got the perfect glancing header and we took the lead. None of that nonsense that we saw against United with crowding the goalie ridiculously. It was the exact opposite and it worked to perfection.
I just
So,
interrupt him
go on.
to say that on his in his post-match, Moisey said that that was a squinny of a corner, and that it was planned to go where it was where you're quite right in saying far too many of the corners went, but he squinnied the corner and Branthwaite got on the end of it. So don't make it. What he said was, don't make it sound like I planned it. I didn't, but football's full of accidents as well.
Well,
That's all.
we all know that he's just being modest there, and he should have credited us with giving him the clue. But no, seriously, back to the game. I thought it. I genuinely, I think it was the performance of the season so far from my perspective. The players look comfortable. The players look happy. They weren't overawed by being in Newcastle's backyard. And obviously there was clearly some, hang on, they stuffed us on our pitch. We're going to have to do that to them to redress that balance for the fans, who were again absolutely brilliant, after climbing those dozens of flights of stairs. And they've all gone home happy after that, deliriously so, I would expect. I can't find all but one tiny criticism, and this is neither here nor there really, but the weight of the final ball sometimes was either too strong or not strong enough. But that's literally down to the conditions as well, because it didn't look like it was raining on TV, but it was raining, so maybe the pitch played a factor in that. But overall, I found nothing other than that, like I said, that churlish weight of the final ball comment from me. Every player put in a shift. I mean, I'm sure, along with many, when we saw the inclusion of Dwight McNeil in the lineup, we thought, hang on, what's all that about? He's not played since he's not played for ages, and he went through the disappointment, I guess, of a transfer deadline day move to Crystal Palace collapsing at the last minute. And there were times when he didn't look at the pace of the game, but you have to say his first touch for the for the second goal was sublime. Thanks for Nick Pope making a nose up of the save from the shot. But Nobby was on hand perfectly to poke in the go-ahead goal. And the most pleasing thing, actually, apart from the fact it was a good all-round performance, a very, very good all-round performance, was the fact that twice Newcastle scored with deflected goals and nobody let their head drop. It was a case of roll the sleeves up, let's go and get the lead back. And to do it both times, you know, what was it, 90-odd seconds and 70-odd seconds, and where better to do it than shutting up the Geordies, you know. I mean, I've always enjoyed going to Newcastle when the times I've been up there, even, you know, for the crack with the fans and whatnot. But to do it twice, you know, for a team has struggled to score goals, and we did it twice yesterday inside, you know, like I said, inside 2 minutes of being pegged back, that showed a bit of character. And Moisey, who I've been critical of in the past, got everything just about spot on yesterday. Couldn't find anything, like I said, other than maybe the weight of the final ball every now and again. Every player who went on the pitch put a shift in. And what could be better than the winning goal going in off the backside for Barry? I thought that just topped it off for me. You know, how many times have we said we don't care how it goes in the back? It can go in the back of go off someone's ass if it wants. Well, it did yesterday. Absolutely perfection. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Performance of the season. Now, take that performance, take that spirit, take that togetherness, take that we ain't going to be pegged back by these load of mugs into Hill Dickinson on Tuesday night. And despite their resurgence in form recently, let's put Burnley to the sword. Please.
Burnley, who scored 8 goals in an hour yesterday.
Yeah, reward the home fans. You know, the away fans have been getting it in spades. Now reward the home fans with a convincing victory and an equally convincing performance, please, against Burnley. And that's no disrespect to Burnley.
And then down to the Emirates for 9 points in 3 games.
It's the very least we can expect now.
I think so.
George, it's far too early to be drinking.
I was going to ask you to check your medication before.
Well, at least mine's prescribed. sorry, I could have crossed you.
I don't see any reason to fear the Emirates at all. They are facing the best away team they can possibly face, since they are the best away team in the league. And I don't think they'll think it's going to be a doddle at all. And as Shearer pointed out last night, which is the only time I've listened to him in years, Everton looked very confident without the ball.
I was surprised, actually. I thought Shearer was actually very complimentary towards Everton. I was expecting him to sit there with a face like a smack backside. But in fairness to him, he didn't.
No.
So my previous disdain for him waned a bit last night.
I know people are going to say, how much has David Moyes paid you to say this? But I think even somebody as biased as Alan Shearer must recognise that a performance like yesterday and our general... I'll get on to Bramley Moore specifically in a few minutes, but okay. our general performances away from home this season are an embodiment of the manager's personality.
Yeah.
And that, what is that personality? The personality is driven by, in a sense, backs against the wall. He's always enjoyed being the underdog, except when we're playing, or historically at least, except when we're playing the Big Six. And you know, that is still something that might be might be questioned. But generally speaking, he enjoys going into games with sort of somewhat under-resourced and with an expectation of us not performing well or losing. And that, particularly against the middle ranking and lower ranking clubs away from home, and that's again been evidenced this season, hasn't it? Whereby we've gone to teams that maybe only marginally better than us, but they have a home advantage, and we've overcome that. I think the difficulty we have is when we go to teams that are technically much superior to us, that sort of just the mentality aspect of it is not enough. Or perhaps Moyes's, and I'll say this as a big fan of his, somewhat limited tactical breadth, shall we say, is not enough to overcome technical excellence, which you might see at Manchester City or, other clubs that historically we've found difficult to perform at. But I thought it was a, I thought yesterday's performance was and result said so many positive things about the club, which okay, I get, and I'm going to get onto it in a few minutes, but I get the differentiation between what we're doing at home and what we're doing away. But it said so much about where the club is at now as against where it was 18 months ago or maybe 15 months ago. And it's very heartening for the future. Sorry, George.
Only to say, and I will say it, that this is what we say every other week. And then we get turned over by Brentford, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Tottenham, Manchester United, everybody. And until a way is found to play at our home stadium, whilst I don't disagree with what you're saying, I'm going to temper it with saying, well, it's only half the cup, isn't it? Because we are crap at home. Absolutely, easy
But
meat.
we've not been that good at home for a number of years.
That's true.
Well,
And
that's the cycle that has to be broken.
yeah, so, and one of the points I was going to make is
Oh, yeah.
I don't think this is a Bramley Moore thing. I think it's when we're at home, we're expected to take the games to the opposition. The opposition do try to do to us what we try to do to the opposition when we play away from home. And tactically, we haven't cracked how to do it. And B, we probably don't have the players that can operate in a system other than the system that we operate most of the times away from home.
I don't think that's true, but that's certainly the evidence I'm looking at.
So then the issue becomes either tactical, what can we do tactically that we're not currently doing, or B, it becomes personnel driven. Who can we bring in to either from our existing resources that can change it, or who do we need to bring in the next transfer window that retains the massive advantages that we have away from home, but brings those advantages into home form. I think if you're trying to work out what the strategy should be between now and the opening of the summer window, it should be how do we retain the resilience of our away performances, where we're happy to give up, significant amounts of possession, and then try and score on the break, or try and scoring not through dominant possession in any sense, but just through isolated events. Even though we've got, although they're performing slightly better now than they have done, even though we've not got really a top class. Centre forward. How can we change that so we retain the resilience, but we get something better higher up the pitch that we can use in a different manner when we're at home? Because I think half the problem we've got when we're at home is that we don't trust ourselves enough to play in a way that's different from how we play successfully away from home. Because on the balance of, if you said to somebody, here's two different behaviors. This behavior you've proven to produce good results, and this behavior generally has produced poorer results. And this is the behavior that you have away from home, and this is the behavior that you have at home. Seems to me fairly obvious that you would gravitate towards the behavior that you have away from home, even though you're at home. Yet when we do that, we give whatever home advantage there is, we give that up to the opposition. And the question, I'm sure David Moyes thinks about this on a daily basis, the question is, how do we change ourselves tactically? Or how do we maintain the same tactics that we use away from home at home without giving up the home advantage?
The poser, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's found the answer to that yet.
No, well, that's evident on the results at Hill Dickinson, because we haven't found the answer to it.
The answer is either in courage. The courage of your convictions that you paid 40 million for Tyler Dibbling, and you've got to give him the confidence that you've seemed to have given Tierno Barry, and better as well to play, so that you take the field at your home ground with far more attacking options, with better attacking options than you do when you play away. If he picks Dwight McNeil against Burnley, and who can blame him? McNeil had a good game yesterday. I'll be baffled, really, because I don't see him as the future, and I think the future's on the bench in a lot of places. And until somebody goes, all right, well, we're losing 7 out of every 10 games at Bromley Moor, so I'm picking the wrong team. Get on there and prove me wrong. And until either that happens, or it seems to me the other one, which he said himself in his pre-match, is recruitment. He has to get lucky and change the recruitment and find better players, And without European football, that's pretty tricky.
The thing that got me yesterday as well was that was arguably this one of this, obviously in the absence of Grealish with his injury, that was probably the strongest bench we've had in a long time.
Fantastic bench, wasn't
Yeah, I looked at the bench and thought he's got plenty of options there. To come on, obviously, like I say, no Grealish, no Alcaraz, but Dibbling, George, Irobenham, Roll,
Yep.
Keane, obviously, and Patterson was there. He had that. That was what I think. That was what got. I mean, I had a few comments come through when the team was announced, and obviously Dwight McNeil was in the starting lineup. People thinking, what, why has he done that? What benefit is that? But obviously, he saw Dwight McNeil's inclusion as, dare I suggest, pivotal to what happened.
And he was right. What are you supposed to
Well,
say?
exactly. He this is the frustrating thing about David Moyes, is he gets it right away from home. And we don't get it right at home, which is bizarre, really. So, I mean, I know what you say. Clearly, Dwight McNeil, no offense, Dwight, but you are not the long-term future. But I'm not so sure that Moisey right now is looking wholeheartedly at long-term future. I think he's looking at immediate future. And he might be thinking, if Dwight McNeil can play, can give us that level of performance or involvement, positive involvement on Tuesday, as he did yesterday, then he might just go with the, it's not broke, I'm not fixing it. And he might just start the same lineup against Burnley on Tuesday rather than what we're suggesting. And we'd like, probably a lot of Evertonians would like to see, was just be a little bit more expansive and creative, and blood the likes of either Dibling or George from the start. I think it, I mean, I don't know. I'm giving up trying to second guess him.
No, we've known David Moyes a long time now, and a lot of respect for him, and a lot of love for him too. And I think he's a straight up and down guy. And if he was sitting here with us now, there'd be no BS or anything. But he's not that kind of guy. He's not going to do that.
No.
And it's probably naive of us to expect that he will. And what he, you're, I think you're dead right. I think he's going, no, boys, we're going to pick up 7 points from these three games, and that will take us further towards Europe. And that means that we can buy better players. But whether he's the coach for better attacking players, I'm not sure. That's my great doubt about David Moyes. Is he an offensive coach?
Well, he's clearly the coach for road games.
For who?
Maybe Everton should set another first in the game and have a manager for away games and a manager for home games.
Very
I mean, we know
interesting.
it, I know it's not going to happen, and that's utter fantasy, but the difference in performance and achievement on the road to what we've seen so far at Hill Dickinson is marked. It's huge.
Everybody says that, they always say it's a result-based business, and it is. Well, our results tell a very simple tale.
I don't know. I mean,
Sorry, Andy. The results at home and away are not just down to how we play, it's how the opposition plays, yeah.
absolutely.
And
And I take Moyes at face value when he says, teams come to the Hill Dickinson, and the fans are nowhere near as close and as kind of physically aggressive as they were at Goodison, because they're further away and they enjoy it more. It's a new experience to them, and they have nothing to prove, and also they have nothing to lose. And obviously, as it goes on, you're not going to tell me that Scott Parker's not going to say to his squad on Tuesday night, "Boys, these are there for the taking. Do you want to show me? Shall I show you the list of people who've beaten them already this season?" And send his players out. As I say, they scored five goals in an hour with two of the preposterous VAR decisions I have ever seen. Tuesday night could be hell on wheels again. Don't know. It's never a dull moment with Everton, is it? Well,
I get the sentiment, but I'd argue the fact.
how about if you're sitting in the dressing room, and maybe I don't know what position you'd be in, maybe not David Moyes' position, and you say, actually, it doesn't really matter whether we're playing at Bramley Moor or anywhere else. I think this Bramley Moor thing has been allowed to build over the season, obviously driven by results. But I think it's frankly, and I know fans are disappointed and frustrated, and they're trying to extract as much as they can out of the new experience of being at a new stadium, having to pay more money. it's more difficult to get to, more difficult to get away from. And we're not seeing a return on that additional investment that fans are having to make. I get that, and that needs to change, obviously. But I think a lot of this is just a lazy media construct about moving into a new stadium. Because actually, if you look at on a historical basis, there's very little variance between results in a new stadium and results in the old stadium over a 2 3 year period. And I don't think, to be honest, I've heard people say, oh, you know, the atmosphere is not the same as it was at Goodison. Are we not looking at things through blue tinted glasses here?
Of
Because
course,
I
and
can pull up 100
if we
reports.
started the other night, the atmosphere would have been amazing. You know, we've got to invite Liverpool to Bramley Moor. Suppose we start by beating them. What will the atmosphere be like then? Goodison will be what it is, a thing of the past, a great glory and a great wonder to us all. But it's the past.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. And I think you've got to put yourself as a fan in the minds of almost nothing in football now is left to chance. The amount of preparation that goes into a game anywhere, particularly in the Premier League, compared to even how it was 10 years ago, is chalk and cheese. Everything is, you know, analyzed to the nth degree. I'm sure you know, from a psychological point of view, you can create a scenario whereby it makes no difference in terms of mindset to whether you're playing at home or away.
Well, I can't but imagine, Paul, that just right now, the Everton players must feel much more confident going away from home. They know precisely what they're going to do, and then every week they do it.
I think they probably do in terms of away games. What I'm saying is, I think the results that we've had at home, the impact of those results are massively overblown by the media. You know, I watched the analysis of you know, analysis in biggest inverted commas you can ever find. On the BBC Match of the Day with regards to the game. And it's so banal and so lacking thought and so lacking insight.
Totally agree. It's the most bombed out program on television.
The format of Match of the Day is so tight
But
now, it's ridiculous.
it would be no different if it was watching Monday Night Football on Sky or Sunday, whatever they use for the Sunday game. We've got to get him, and this is what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure that David Moyes, and I'm pretty sure that the players pay no attention at all to what the media says, and even to a large degree, no attention at all to what the fan media say.
Yeah, and wafflers like us, what do we know?
Well, I think they probably listened last week because they knew I wasn't coming on,
To yourself.
and they wanted to listen to both of you. But
Quite right.
you know the point I'm making?
Yeah.
Because I know if I was running a business and the business was under pressure for whatever reason, and it was and one of the reasons would be because of external pressures that have nothing to do with us or nothing to do with our customers or our opposition stuff. I'd be telling the people who worked in my business to completely ignore all the noise and just get on with what we believe to be the right way of doing whatever business that we're in. And David Moyes has managed over 1,200 games in his career. must be saying the same to the players. Now, that's not to say that that automatically means that we perform or we get the results rather in home games that we get in away games, because there is that. We've always got to take into account what the opposition are going to do. But I think we'll come good at Bramley Moor, but only when we have a group of players that can play in the same way that we play away from home, and then also play in a different way when we play at home. And I think the problem that we've got at Everton, and this is just me, there's a complete, no mark in terms of football knowledge. The problem that we have is that the group of players that we have are only Premier League effective in terms of playing the way that we play away from home, and that is not enough when you're playing at home. And
100%.
the opposition know that, and that's why we find it more difficult at home than we do away. It's got nothing to do with the fact that we've moved into a new stadium or anything else, because I'm pretty sure if we were playing at Goodison Park this season, the results wouldn't be that different.
Maybe that who unprovable, isn't it? But I think what you're saying is right, yeah. And it was also interesting in his pre-match that one of the journalists asked him, was Jimmy Garner going to start at two? And he said, no, Jake's back. And you kind of go, what on earth is Nathan Patterson doing? What, why have they given Seamus a contract? They're never going to get a game. He doesn't. And it's entirely within his remit, but he doesn't trust him, and he obviously doesn't trust Dibbling either. That's kind of a bit worrying, really. I mean, not. I take his judgment on defenders. I can't argue with him. His judgment on attackers, I'm not so sure about. But here we are, eighth in the league, and I remember the very first. Talking to Blues of this season, we said if we finished eighth, we'd all be thrilled to bits. Well, we're on course to do better than that.
Just on the point of attackers and defenders. Well,
Yep.
we're at what point in the pitch do we start defending?
Immediately.
Yeah,
So,
the moment the opposition get possession of the ball.
is it not the case that we defend as a team
Absolutely. That's what Clive taught everybody.
and maybe, and I'm just throwing this out here, maybe Moyes believes that the team that he's selecting at the moment, without Dibbling, for example, without Sterling George, is collectively a better defensive unit than it would be with them. And given that probably Moyes knows that he's not the best attacking manager in the world, knows that we've not got the best attack in the world, believes that the best route to achieving a result is in defending, and defending as a team, as against trying to attack more as a team.
That's
Yeah.
unquestionably true and
Yeah.
unquestionably correct, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
So what we're seeing is the results of pragmatism.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think anybody could argue that. There can't be a more pragmatic manager in the Premier League than David Moyes.
So why has he got so many knockers?
If we beat every week at home.
Yeah,
I'm
because
sorry,
but
football is that.
us getting beat at home is because of what I've just said.
Yeah, but when you make that horrible journey, and I met three, a whole pile of scouts on Saturday, because we're going to the Everyman with our show in Liverpool, and their whole pile of them came up to see it on Saturday, and I was talking to the. to the, I went, right, who are the Evertonians? One guy put his hand up. So I was talking to him, and he'd been to Bramley Moor, and he said the transport, the stadium's wonderful, he loves it, but the transport is awful, and the problems of the transport are bad. So people make that effort every weekend, every week to get beat. It's not really a surprise in the world we're living in that they moan about Moyes, and I moan about him too, because I'm sick to death of it not happening, away and at home. And we've analysed the reasons, and I think we're onto something. And I think what you've said is correct. It doesn't alter the sort of primal thing of, oh, Christ Almighty, we got beat again. You can't help that. And the culture that we're in is now, you must blame somebody. Absolutely essential that somebody gets crucified. And I'm sure Moyes would laugh his face off and go, yeah, that's part of my job.
I get that. What I'm saying is, you can't have the upside of our away performances and the way that we set up away without acknowledging the fact that that impacts our home performances, because the difference in way we play between the two is not that different, because we don't really have any option other than to play in that way. That's my
I
point.
agree. Well, I think my point, I don't know about Andy, is that if you had a bit more courage, you might try different options on your own pitch. You might encourage the players to go looking for the attacking players that we've got. And I
I think
don't
that's
think.
what you and I would certainly prefer us to approach the games with the home games with a bit more adventure, as you say, courage to go for the game.
Well, if you're going to lose anyway, Andy.
Well, yeah, if you're going to lose, you might as well go down fighting. I wouldn't like. I wouldn't like Moisey to come out and say, unequivocally, we are going to play every game, home or away, as though it's an away game. Despite all the goodness that we saw yesterday, I don't think you can set your stall out to play at home like that in front of. In front of the vast majority of the crowd being your supporters. The supporters want to be invigorated. They want to make a noise. They want to be involved. And, you could say, well, the crowd at St James's, or the Evertonian section of the crowd at St James's, they were sure as hell were involved and invigorated. Yeah, of course they were. Because, you're away from home. You're vastly outnumbered. The very least you can do is make a din. At home, I think fans obviously expect to be in the driving seat, shall we say, not going into the game with a backs to the wall attitude at home. I don't know. I mean, all the positives of yesterday could disappear in a heartbeat on Tuesday night, and I'm hoping for God's sake that they don't. Like I said, no disrespect to Burnley, who are making a fist of their relegation fight in the last couple of games. On the back of yesterday's performance, on the back of every player's performance yesterday, not individually and collectively. Everton should have absolutely nothing to fear about taking on Burnley on Tuesday night at Hill Dickinson. I just want to see that no fear and just take the game. And like I said, we're long overdue a positive performance and result at home. There were aspects of the game against United that were positive. Lots of pressure, lots of possession, but no cutting edge, and then we get undone by one attack. I just want to see us more on the front foot and taking the game to the opposition and actually making it count. And Paul's suggesting that we haven't got the, enough of that quality to do that on a consistent basis, which reluctantly I have to agree with, but shouldn't stop us trying.
What if Moisey says, obviously he's never going to say this publicly, but what if he's sitting at home on a Saturday evening with a nice Claret or something, because I believe he likes his red wine, although anything
Yeah.
red is probably an
About time
anathema.
somebody came up with a blue wine, then, isn't it?
Well, blue nun, remember that? What if he says, the best way that I'm actually going to ever achieve anything at Everton is by looking at what I can do. This is where he stands today. Looking at what I can achieve next year. We've achieved a base objective this year, which is we're not going to get relegated and we're likely to finish in and around the top half of the league, which is probably what the expectation was at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that in order to progress next year, because all of the competing clubs around us in the middle of the table are going to continue their investment and make it more competitive in the middle of the table in order to get into, because we've talked about this before, we've got a league within a league within a league. We've got those clubs fighting for relegation. We've got a load of clubs in the middle of the league. And then we've got a load of clubs at the top of the league. Those clubs in the middle of the league are trying to get into that group of clubs that consistently qualify for European competition. What if Moyes is thinking, or what indeed if the owners have said to Moyes, we'll invest, but we're going to invest when we think you've got a chance of going into European football. And that may be not this season because it's too early in the development, given where we were 14, 15 months ago. But next season, the expectation is European qualification. Moyes will be sitting there thinking, what's my best way of doing that? Because I don't think I've got a squad strong enough currently to qualify for European football. The only thing I can do about that in terms of what we achieve next season is finish as high up the league as we possibly can this season, because that strengthens my arm when I go and ask for X amount of investment in players this summer.
Yeah.
Then he will then revert back to the behaviours that we've seen all season, which is basically protect what we've got, win where we can, and try not to lose where we can't win. Now, unfortunately, at Bramley Moor, that's meant we've lost more games than we should have done. But I think, we said earlier, and don't think anybody, even if you dislike Moyes intensely, and I'm not accusing either of you in that sense, but anybody else, Moyes is ultimately a pragmatist, as we said earlier. And I feel as if his objective here is actually what's going to happen next season. But what happens next season is driven by us getting as high up the league as we possibly can this season. And that means playing to what we know is our strengths, even if that makes the results at Bramley Moor less effective or less likely to be effective than the results away from home.
I think from quite... I think from a fan's perspective, I think if we could get the results, and build on performance, the joy of watching Everton Football Club play expansive, attractive, offensive football as against, we know what we've got to do to win this game, and if it looks ugly, so be it. We'll get the result. I think right now we would take the results, because I don't think there's any doubt that the one thing that every Evertonian would relish, we've said this before, is compounding the critics and compounding everybody and the pundits and everyone else, and actually making Europe this season. It's, you know, I understand that we're not good enough yet. So let's finish as high as we can, and we'll build next year, and we'll have a real go at it next year. Let's live in the now. It's possible that we could make Europe this year. And I think, you know, if we have to play pragmatic away game type performances in order to achieve it, so be it. I think the fan base would accept it if we made Europe this year. If we play pragmatic football and don't make it, that might be a different kettle of fish, but and I think we should aim as high as possible by whatever methods at the moment. And you know, and the nature of the performance we can work on a longer scale. But let's get the results right. It's the result we've said it till the cows come home, when you have particularly, Paul, it's a results business. So get the results, and the nature of how we achieve them, you know, is the longer term project.
Don't disagree with that. And I think the only disagreement would be is how we achieve the results. And Moyes has clearly got his way of doing things, which doesn't necessarily match people's expectations going into a brand new stadium, paying more money and making it more difficult to go there.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
yeah, that's the whole thing. You're at home, you want to be entertained, blah, 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 blah. But I think if you actually had ran a straw poll of Evertonians, would you take 1-0 home wins now for the rest of the season, for the remaining home games, and maintain our current level of away form if that would get us into Europe? I think they'd all bite your hand off.
I don't
And,
think there's
you know,
anybody.
there would obviously be a lot who would put a caveat, yeah, but it's boring. But you know, throw them a trip
Not
to
boring losing every week, Andy.
pardon?
It's not as boring as losing every week.
No, exactly. If you're going to get bored, at least win. At least give us one moment in every game where everyone can jump up off the seat and scream and shout.
And on that subject, let's go to Jordan Peter Jordan Jordan
Pickford.
save, Pickford save at the end of the match. That was just something fantastic.
Yeah,
I
I mean,
mean,
it's interesting that we left it so late in the podcast to talk about it, because my tabloid headline was going to be Tonali Finale.
it was something else I say, wasn't
It
it?
was. I thought about this, and I'm struggling to think of the obvious one that comes to mind in very different circumstances is Neville Southall against
Yeah,
Falco at
Falco at White Hart
White
Lane.
Hart Lane.
Yeah,
But again.
that look, yesterday was JP's big Nev moment, Falco moment, whatever you want to term it, without a shadow of a doubt. There can't have been anybody else, anybody in the stadium who seriously expected him to make that when you saw the quality of the volley from Tonali. I mean, you know, credit him. That was an outstanding volley, struck with genuine power and precision. And JP, I mean, there was that picture on Match of the Day, wasn't there, of Tarkowski from the picture from behind the goal of Tarkowski going, wow, just an outstanding moment. And you know, where I mean, for JP, where better for him to pull out a save like that than St James's?
Yeah, I got a couple of mails today from Tune fans going, that Macam expletive deleted.
Well, I got one last night from my mate Jonathan, who's a Newcastle fan, and he said just incredible, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very level-headed guy, you know, despite being a rabid Newcastle fan, and he's just he said just outstanding, incredible save.
It was an incredible volume, wasn't it? I mean, it was like akin to that one that Shearer scored against us years and years and years ago at St James's Park.
Yeah, I mean, everything was right about it, wasn't it? It was a great, a great shot and a great save. It was football in perfection almost. Well, it was from our perspective, it was from Newcastle's perspective, it was only 99% perfection because it didn't hit the back of the net, but that's their problem, not ours.
But was it any more important than the double saves he made against Chelsea or the penalty save he made against Leicester?
Well,
That's debatable, isn't it? I mean, in terms of what will stick in the memory, that it was a spectacular save.
He made
But
a wonderful save at Old Trafford too, when we were beating him then. Just fantastic. I mean, he's quite rightly the best goalie in England. And
And
he had no real competitor.
people were making lots of statements on social media last night that, without that level of performance from him over the last 4 or 5 years, we could well no longer be in this division.
Possibly.
It's maybe a bit strong to say he has single-handedly kept Everton in the Premier League in recent seasons. But you can understand why people think that way when he pulls saves like that. And like you said, the double save against Chelsea and penalty saves and whatever. And, he's a class act and he's funny with it as well. He turns to the crowd and pulls faces and whatever, especially at Newcastle. They true, no wonder they hate him, but begrudgingly, they must respect his quality.
Well, especially when their goalie squinnied up so badly yesterday.
Well, yeah, and he's allegedly the number two for England.
Good
Yeah, well,
keeper. He
yeah.
showed that yesterday, didn't he?
Bad mistake.
There's
Oh.
I remember from a long time ago, somebody actually it was Mark McCormack of the guy who said it by IMG. He told me. So IMG, obviously this big sports agency, heavily involved in initially involved in all sorts now, but in those days involved in tennis and golf in particular. And he said to me that the difference between being the third best player in the world and the fourth best player in the world, the gap between third and fourth is greater than the gap between being fourth and 200th in the world.
Wow.
That's how steep the curve goes when you get right to the top. And I was thinking about that yesterday with Pickford. I genuinely don't think there's a better, certainly there's not a better goalkeeper in the Premier League, let alone English, at this moment in time. And I don't know.
You'd probably get arguments from City fans about Donnarumma. And
Yeah,
you'd
but
probably get arguments from Arsenal about Raya, and probably from them across the park about Alisson. But it'd be an interesting discussion.
they don't have to defend a goal. It's defended by the 10 in front of them that Everton do. And I don't know enough about global football to say there's a better goalkeeper somewhere else in the world than he is,
Well,
but.
the question is right now. Can you name a goalie that you would swap JP out for? And the answer to that is no. So we've got him. He's clearly England's number one. He is arguably world number one. Let's enjoy him as long as we possibly can. And
Well, we
hopefully,
basically got him for the rest of his career.
and hopefully we'll the club. The players now or in the future will do their utmost to secure not only for themselves but for him as well, the one thing we've currently been unable to do for Seamus Coleman, and that's provide him with a piece of silverware. You know, that's got to be the biggest regret of Seamus Coleman's career, that he's never won a trophy with Everton. Hopefully we can put that record straight for Jordan Pickford. I mean, he'll obviously play a big part in it himself. But you know, it would be lovely. I'd love to see his antics if he won a trophy. Beating Newcastle in the European Cup final would be comical.
It would. Well, gents, I'm conscious of time. We said that we were going to talk about something relating to Everton and Everton's sort of communications with fans and stuff. I'm probably going to leave it till next week,
Okay.
other than to say that whilst there's still not a lot happening with the Friedkins, and I don't think that's going to change very much, I do detect quite a change in terms of how certain parts of the club are now beginning to communicate with people, fan media, for example. Anyway, I'm going to leave it at that and talk about it next week because we're way over time. But I think there's a lot of positive stuff going on inside the club
Good.
that we're not yet aware of or is not yet apparent, but is. You know, the Friedkins had to change an awful lot when they came into the club. And I think there's some evidence of those changes starting to appear. Anyway, talk about that next week. But yeah, I really enjoyed today. It was excellent. And
This stuff, yeah.
how can it not be when you've won at Newcastle?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk after the Burnley game and hopefully the narrative regards Bramley Moore will change.
Let's hope
Yeah,
so.
we'll never. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody for listening. And I do apologize for those who really enjoyed just George and Andy last week. The alternative version, Costigan talking the blues, will be available on Spotify, iTunes. But I do believe that it's going to be behind a paywall. So you better talk to Andy and George about that.
No chance.
Thanks very much, guys. Take care.
Cheers, Paul.
Bye, darlings.